in. Good Friday morning, Friday, January the 18th, 2019. 15 minutes past the hour, you're tuned in to Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. Pastor, here we are, the day before what everybody thinks will be the big day.
Yes, it is the day before. You know, it's funny. I was looking at some pictures that came across Facebook, and they've been on in Instagram and whatnot, taking me back to that blizzard of 78. And one of them that I thought was, there's one where there's a car going through where they had plowed out a wall that's probably 12 feet high, and the car's going down through the middle of it. But one that really stood out to me that I had forgotten about was how heavily the railroad tracks were covered. We're talking about drifts that were twice the height of the top of the train, and they had to come down through and open those things all back up. What an amazing power nature has.
Well, it's interesting because it's a power that still affects people. In this technological world that we are all in now, this world where we go to restaurants and we don't talk to the person who's sitting across from us, where everybody in the household has a smartphone, there is still the adage that when a snowstorm's coming, you must go to the grocery store, you must buy bread, you must buy milk. It's never changed.
It's never changed because people know what can happen, and they don't want to be left without. I know when we were getting that last snow just a week or two ago, I went into Kroger because I needed a couple of things, not because of the weather. And all the fresh fruits, berries, and stuff were gone. There were very few left. And I was like, wow, people are really, you know, cleaning the store out today. And you'd think milk and bread and whatnot. There's plenty of milk and bread, but some of those other things they had really cleaned out.
Well, the funny thing is, to me, doing the weather report the last 2 days for Saturday, which is supposed to be the big day, it's interesting because the weather report, as far as snow goes, is calling for 4 to 8 inches in this area, which isn't even a foot. That's not bad. That's not blizzard of 78 snow totals. But what they are saying is blizzard conditions. Now, blizzard conditions is drifting snow and high winds.
Blowing.
And, yeah.
Visibility issues.
Right. And I think if you are on the road while this 4 to 8 inches is coming down, it's going to be a rough time. But I think once it's fallen, that'll pretty well be it.
It will be. And then it's going to get cold, though.
Oh, -16.
Yeah, we've got to get stuff shoveled right away, or it's going to get very hard to shovel. Once it settles down and gets soft and then hardens, it'll be pretty tough to get out of there. You know, it's funny. My brother lives up in the UP, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. Well, actually, he's over into Wisconsin now, just over the border. But all his kids, some of my nieces and nephews, live up that way. And they are right up at Lake Superior. The whole family is. And even my brother, who's now in Wisconsin, he's still at Lake Superior. But anyway, they kind of chuckle at us getting wound up about weather here because they're talking about their winters are in feet of snow. And I've seen pictures of them shoveling, you know, from where they park to their front door. And they literally, by the end of the season, are walking down a hallway and to get to where they're going. And it's not uncommon at all for them to hire people if they can't do it. There's guys that shovel off roofs to keep the roof load from getting heavy. It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is. And it, one of the things that this week has been of high interest to me is that it really was a week. I was out in the grocery store, and they did run out of milk, and they were mobbed. On Wednesday and Thursday.
Were they?
Yesterday. Yeah.
I haven't been there.
Well, the interesting thing about it is everybody was saying, you know, usually, if we're talking about Saturday's storm, you don't usually see that until Friday. And Thursday's storm was not a big one. Now, you would expect business to pick up somewhat because it's the night before a storm, but not like it did. It was unbelievably picked up. And this kept happening, and people were saying, well, what is going on? Well, what we found out was, timing is everything, that because of the government shutdown, people's food cards for February loaded on Wednesday.
Right. That's right. Oh, that would have been.
Yes. So the first of the month for people who use the EBT cards
was yesterday.
Was Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Wednesday. So not only was there the normal upswing you would get from a little bit of snow, but there was an uptick because it was like the first of the month.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah. So it was a combination that created a nasty situation at the old grocery stores.
Well, something, you touched on something that I'd like to talk about a minute ago, but before I do, I want to bring up something you have talked about in the last week or so, and that is, I want to remind everyone, as I'm sure Scott will also, to be prepared. Let's make sure that we have blankets in our car if we're out. Let's make sure that we keep that exhaust pipe clear if we get stuck, and not just at the exhaust pipe, but out away from the car so we don't have carbon monoxide issues. Make sure that you're prepared. Folks, don't let your kids go out without coats, say, to just run to the store. You don't know what can happen and how quickly it can become an issue. You get in a bad accident, and if because of other accidents they can't get there right away, you may be in the cold for some time with no way to stay warm. So those are some really important things. Another thing that really kind of struck me that I really want people to pay attention to, just in the last week, we've seen two deaths that were attributed to winter conditions. One was a lady that her had a gas leak, they believe, in the house, and the house went up in flames, and they found her sleeping on the couch with her dog. Evidently, there was the gas leak first and probably took them out first with just the gas leak. So I want to remind you, you start smelling gas, check. When you smell gas, you make a phone call, or you find out where it's coming from. The second one is really important. There was just a boy up in Canton that passed away yesterday from a that was burnt in a heater fire, electric heater, caught on fire. And those things, you got to watch them. You got to make sure that they're plugged into directly to the wall or to a heavy extension cord if they are on a cord, and then you still need to check them because they have a tendency to overheat and get hot. Keep things away from them. Don't overload circuits, those kind of things. Make sure you're using a safe unit and keep things away from it. So if that unit itself was to catch fire, there isn't anything around it that would catch also. This is just a dangerous time of year. I just found out yesterday that my brother-in-law came home. He had a small heater in the bathroom, and he was gone, and he came home, and his bathroom was on fire. And he just got home in time, caught it, and put it out. But it's something we really got to be careful of.
Well, last Saturday, we also had the snowmobiler right here in Marion County who was out, had all his gear on, helmet and everything, but got caught on a wire. And there doesn't seem to be any alcohol in play there or anything. And, you know, that's a tragedy because when the visibility is bad, that's what happens.
Yeah, and when the snow's up and it's covering fence wire and stuff, you don't see it. Matter of fact, there was, I believe it was Jack Kirby, the guy that has Kirby's Auto Parts in Richwood, was injured that way horribly several years ago, really bad. Went through a fence, couldn't see the fence. And it's just so, so dangerous. Snowmobiles are fun, but they're dangerous.
Something nobody ever talks about, too, and this is not to get people's paranoia up, but during winter months, when we have particularly lower temperatures, like we're going to have on Sunday, negative 16, the capillaries in your body get smaller. And if you have any kind of heart condition or if you are having a heart attack, a lot of times it can be triggered faster in colder weather. That's why you hear of so many people who go out to shovel their walks having heart attacks. Now, yes, don't overdo it when you're shoveling your walk, but there's another reason that happens as well, is because the capillaries get smaller, less blood gets to your lungs. So if you go outside and you're starting to feel winded, you got to stop.
Right. You know, on the way in, as I was sitting out in the parking lot and should have been in sooner, I was sitting out there. I made a phone call about that very thing, about making sure that the elderly people in our church all have someone to shovel for, that we get a way to get them cleaned out, because I don't want that happening. And I know a lot of times it's, you know, one spouse will say to the other, aren't you going to go out and shovel that walk? And if they're elderly, don't push it. You know, do a little bit at a time. Don't get carried away, because literally every snowstorm we hear of someone having a heart attack and passing away shoveling snow. It is strenuous work. I do it myself, and sometimes you'll feel really bad, and then you'll kind of get in the groove, and you keep going when maybe you should have quit.
What I've learned about this is that I don't have a whole lot to shovel, but what I've learned is I dress warmer and move more moderately to try to stop that problem. Because a lot of people, when they go out, they only want to go out once, because when they come in, they take off their galoshes or pants that are all done. So I get as warm as possible, gloves, layers, coats, hats, hoods, whatever is possible. And then I just move slower, and I'm not so cold because I'm more bundled up.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Hey, I mentioned a few minutes ago that you said something a few minutes ago that kind of sparked a thought with me. And I'd like to kind of – it was kind of the subject I wanted to talk about a little bit about anyway. You were saying that people sit in a restaurant and they don't talk to each other and they're on their phones. I want to talk a little bit about that, Scott. I think we need to start talking to each other more. We've talked before on the show many times about how divided our country's being and how divided people are. You know, if we're ever going to have expect our government to show common ground, I think that we need to show common ground with each other. You know, I heard something, I was watching the news before I went to bed last night. Couldn't tell you what channel, couldn't tell you it was because I was flipping through them. But this guy came on, and he was a real brief commentary, and he said, he was talking about this government shutdown and how they're not reaching a decision. And he said, look, 80% of the Democrats are telling Nancy Pelosi, you hold firm and we don't want a wall. And 79% of the Republicans are telling Trump, you hold firm and you don't want a wall. He said, how are we going to ever come to a decision, you know, with the pressure they're both getting? And I thought to myself, the second I heard that, what came to my mind was, it's not about those people pressuring them. It's about the American people and make the right decision for the country and come together and do it and quit worrying about, you know, the political outcome of it. Just get it. Do whatever you got to do and get it done. And that's to both sides. But doesn't it come back to people in general? You ever, like Scott, for instance, you got a problem with a neighbor. Maybe they don't like the way that you painted your fence. Maybe, you know how little disputes happen, you know. Why aren't we knocking on the door and saying, hey, let's talk about this, you know, rather than putting up walls?
Well, this is the interesting thing. And I think that's why we can still solve those problems, because I see people do it all the time. I don't know how many times, you know, I've been busy and I just have neglected my yard, and my neighbor will be out and they'll just mow it. Without being asked, they'll just do it. Or if somebody puts up a decoration, they are that's blocking something, they'll be more than accommodating to say, "Would you like me to move this?" Would you? And that's compromise.
I'm seeing a lot of that too.
That's exactly what that is. But here's what's going on, in my opinion, with this government shutdown. Because everybody is talking about it, because this is one of the few things in government right now that is trickling down to people, with the EBT cards loading early, and they will not load in February. I hope people know that if the government stays shut down. There are TSA people who are not working, who have been sent home, are working without pay. FDA's not working. Thousands of people have just been called back to the IRS who will not get paid. So the thing, though, I think, here's why we can compromise on the fence painting and the things in the yard and the grass mowing and all that. We can compromise on all that because it's us. You know, we in our own little way are dictators of our own little area. So so we can say, okay, you know, I will do this. And that's where it ends. But the problem is, right now, is how you started the conversation about 80% of Democrats are saying, Pelosi, you can't budge, and 79% of Republicans are saying, Trump, you can't budge. Those aren't dictatorships. Those are people say, I believe if you lock Nancy Pelosi and President Trump in a room, they would come to some kind of solution. If they did not have the fallout when they left that room,
exactly,
that they would have to go face.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. Within 5 minutes, because like I say, everybody's talking about it, I know how somebody feels, even if they don't tell me how they feel about it, in a roundabout way. They'll say, I don't like it. Why can't they get along? And then the opinion comes in about how they feel about it.
But, you know, you used to have those bold old guys, even like, you know, I'll speak of an old Democrat, Tip O'Neill, you know, and he'd tell his constituents, look, I'm going into this meeting and we're coming out with a deal. And you'd have Republicans doing the same thing. We're going to hammer it out, and that's just the way it's going to be. And then people would fall in line and say, well, they're going to, you know, we better. And today there is so much political pressure and fallout and you know, and constant protesting of everything and having to have our own way. And I think that it's time for those of us, like you and I, and others that understand and love this country, and understand the richness of its history and the richness of and its potential, to decide that, you know what, we're going to make an impact. And what I mean by that, we are going to be the positive ones. We're not going to stir up the dirt. We're not going to stir up the mud. We're going to say, look, I realize that. I realize this. Let's get to a common solution and use some common sense. And that goes in our rhetoric during the day. That goes in our relatives, in the people we meet every day. You know, if you start seeing a groundswell of people that want good, there's good that comes out from it. That then, you know, you get more pressure on those people in public office to knock it off and do what you're doing. You know, it's so sad that people have been so conditioned to vote by sound bites, and they get sound bites from the news media, and they get, and then all of a sudden they run to the polls and they may vote. You know, I think maybe it is time for some term limits. Maybe it is time for some people to people say, you know what, you've been in all this many years. I can't really see anything positive that you've done. No matter what you've done nothing but live off, you know, lobbyists and whatnot. You know, it's really time you go home and make your own money.
You know, the interesting thing about that is, though, and it baffles me, is they do have to run for re-election, and people keep sending them back.
I know. So I don't get it.
That's what's strange. I mean, term limits say you can't come back. But if you didn't do anything in your first term, we do have the option to send you away. But nobody does that. Now, they say that's name recognition, and they have more money to spend, and so on and so forth. But if you are watching television, if you are reading the newspapers, if you are staying abreast of what's going on, I don't know why you do vote for somebody who you think has not done anything for you. But we do.
We do. And, you know, it's funny. One of the first things that comes to my mind when I think about that, clear back when I first realized that this was going on, when I was a kid, back when they had horses and buggies, Chalmers P. Wiley was a great PR man. He was a congressman for years and years and years. And he would go to the schools and talk to kids. He did a lot of that PR stuff. And Chalmers was the first time I ever heard someone describe someone as a career politician. And someone was talking to me one day that was also in politics and said, I said something about liking Chalmers Wiley, and they rolled their eyes. I said, what's wrong with Chalmers Wiley? They said, I've followed his career and been in politics for years and years, and I have to tell you, that man has done nothing. Now, I can tell you the guy could have been dead wrong, the guy could have been right. That's not the point. But my point being, when you look at it, it's someone that has been sent to represent us for all those years, you need to see landmark things that they had something to do with. If you're in a company for many, many years, and you just do nothing but take up space, if you do stay there, you're going to be in the mailroom. If you work hard and you will get ahead, and we should see that kind of thing from our politicians. They should be fighting for the people back home that elected them and what they want. not making deals with each other. But Washington has become such a quagmire of this stuff. And you know what really, really takes me for a loop is all the finger pointing and the name calling. I mean, didn't we learn to quit doing this in the second or third grade? I mean, weren't we called into the office and told, you know, you need to be a little more kind. You know, you don't use that language. You don't talk to this person that way. And we've got people that are supposed to be the people we hold up as those representing us that are acting like five-year-old children. And it's, I know everyone loves to point at the president's tweets, and I wish some of his rhetoric was different too, don't get me wrong. But it's not just him, it's everywhere. I mean, the stuff that's being said, it's like, can you guys just grow up? What are we going to do with you? And we created this monster that no one knows what to do with. And everyone thinks, well, you know, I got to trust this guy because right at election time, they all sound good, and they want to appeal to your heart and appeal to what you want. But I challenge people to get more involved enough to really look at what they've done or they haven't done. And if they haven't done anything, it's time to let them go. And, you know, look at their salaries. Do you realize that our representatives are not subject to a lot of the same things they impose on us? Why would that be?
Well, you know what's interesting? I find this fascinating when it comes to the verbiage that people are using now. And I mean, there has been bad verbiage in the past, and usually people are censored or something of that nature. But what happens now is when somebody uses a bad piece of verbiage, people just kind of go, well, I wanted you to get more involved. I wanted you to speak out. I wanted you to do that. You know, that's John Wayne. And, that just creates an awful atmosphere.
You know, something else, Scott, that I think is playing into this, and I'm going to challenge you folks out there. This is a challenge. I want you to try to do this. If you're grandparents, if you're parents, if you're adult, if you're a young person that's listening, I want you to pay attention to the cartoons on television and the kids' shows. I have never in my life, I have grandkids, so I see this stuff, and one just blew me away yesterday that an animated figure was talking. I cannot believe the disrespectful tone and the same things they call each other on these shows anymore. I mean, it's like they're all little smart alecks, even the animated characters, calling each other names, rolling their eyes at each other, just being basically rude behavior.
Well, I don't know when this became the norm, because when something is the norm, it is hard to get rid of. Because when it's the norm, that means most people are doing it. And when most people are doing it, it is hard to change it. I was reading a story this morning in the newspaper where a newscaster in St. Louis is not particularly one way or the other. It goes both ways at different times. Used a racial slur in a newscast. On a newscast. Now, I assume this person has some intelligence in their brain to get the job that they got and to do those jobs every day. At what point in his mind did he not realize that what he was saying was a racial slur, and at what point did he realize that he was not doing it in front of a large audience?
Well, because it's become so much a norm. And the other thing with racial slurs in is there's certain racial slurs we can get away with because of that body is look, a racial slur should be a racial slur. I don't care if you're talking about Italians, blacks, whites, whatever. When you make a comment about them, they all should be treated equally. And some racial slurs have almost taken on a holy grail. Like the word is bigger than what's even thought. And the minute you say that word, everything breaks loose. And where have we gotten to that at? You know, we need to say, you know, look, let's worry about how we treat everyone, not just this group or that group or another group. And, you know, it's kind of funny. When I was growing up, when I look back now, I think most people will realize we had a different set of standards. There's always people that don't abide by the standards, and no standard's perfect most of the time. But there was a set of standards we had in the way we talked, the way we spoke to adults, the way we treated each other, the way we spoke to our parents. A lot of that came from our Judeo-Christian upbringing, as far as our country goes, the values that came out of Scripture and what was told, and people passed that on, and they believed that, and they followed that. And I can remember so many times knowing or being threatened with having my mouth washed out with soap. Now, I don't remember if that ever happened, but I understood the meaning behind it. What's coming out of your mouth is something dirty and nasty, and your mouth needs cleaned. And
well, you know what that reminds me of? When I started in media, because I never took a journalism class when I was in college. I never did anything like that. So my first job in media, where I was on the air at another radio station, was my first time that I'd been on the air. I'd never done that. And back then, you know, you still got hand-delivered letters. Emails had just come in, so you got some of those. 80% of the emails or 80% of the letters I would get, I'm not saying they were rude, but they were just pointing out something they didn't like about something I had done. Now, in the beginning, I thought, boy, I must really stink at what I'm doing. But then I asked somebody who had been there for 40 years, I said, you know, gee whiz, I'm doing something wrong. And they said, no, 80% of mine is that way too, because people don't pat you on the back. People aren't going to send you a letter saying, great job. But they're more apt to send you a letter saying, I didn't like that you did this. And that is true. If you think about it, it goes back to the I love to use the television. Nobody ever complains about the television that's working. But you certainly complain about the one that's not working.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And I think sometimes, you know, how many times have I contacted a station with opinions? I believe that this is the only station that I've ever called in on, and it's been in the last year that I've done it. So that tells me, up to this point, I have never called a station. And one of my favorite things to do is listen to talk radio. Now, it used to be, I'm kind of backing off it a little. I'm trying to keep my blood pressure down. Anyway, but, you know, part of it is I'm driving. And you can't really, I don't want to look at my phone and try to call a number and get involved. Or I'm almost somewhere and I don't want to start a conversation. Or I can't get through, couldn't get through. You know, it's those kind of factors. I've been a person that I have an on and an off switch. And when I'm off, I stop. And when I'm on, I go. And I'm always on the move. So for me to sit down and have the time to listen to something and then make a phone call isn't something that would normally happen anyway. And I wonder how many other people are out there are like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the calls we get here when we do an opinion-oriented show, I've always thought, well, first of all, I don't know what anybody's going to say. That if somebody else is a part of the show, how do I know what they're going to say? How do I mean, I might have a good idea about what way they're going to feel about a certain issue, but I really don't know that that issue will come up that day.
No.
There's usually not a script there. There's never a script there that says that.
And most of the time when it goes a negative way, I've listened to you, you handle it pretty well. You try to go back to the middle a little bit and say, what about this or what about that? And that's the way it should be.
Because my feeling is I don't want to black out those opinions because I also don't want to black out the opposite side on any issue. It's something as simple as local politics. Mm-hmm. If you feel the mayor should be reelected, you should be able to make that case on this station. But understand people who don't like the mayor, who might not like that somebody's making that case on this station, if you wanted to make the case why he doesn't want to, shouldn't be reelected, you're going to be allowed to do that too. And that's why censorship outside of four-letter words that you can't say on air, have always felt it's a bad thing, because I do believe that if you hear both sides, even if somebody's misstating a fact, I think somewhere in the collective middle, you find the truth.
Yeah, I you know, my only, the only thing that ever spurs me to want to call in, is two things. One, if someone's sharing an experience and it's an open line, and I have a good one to go along with it, that's fun. And the other time is when someone's misstating a fact or being, I really struggle with dishonesty. It's always just gone right through me. When people, especially when they're on the air, you know, there was a presidential race 20, 30 years ago that I was going to vote in, and I did vote in. And the candidate that that by all means would have supported was in a news conference, was speaking, and told something I knew to be a total lie. I knew they knew it, the American people knew it, and I thought to myself at that time, do you honestly think you can stand as the President of the United States in front of people and tell a lie like that and get away with it? And I didn't vote for him. And they lost. Not because I didn't vote, but I think a lot of people felt the same way. And what's interesting is we're in a day and age now where you can tell a lie and there's no repercussions. And I think there should be. I think that we do have to come back to look, this is the truth, this isn't the truth. Let's report the truth and let the American people be intelligent enough to make a decision on whether what direction. See, I did. You know, and it wasn't because of what any media person said. It was because of what came directly out of that person's mouth that I knew to be a lie.
You know, I heard somebody make the case years ago. This was in the 80s when tabloid television first came in. And really, tabloids were taking off to a high degree. They were selling more than they ever had before. This happened in the 80s. And it was interesting because I saw a panel of newspaper editors and television talk show hosts and cable talk show hosts. And this is the 80s when there only was one cable television network. And they got them all together, and basically the consensus that this great group of people had together was that the more information you get out there, even if it is opinion-oriented, the more people will consume it, and the more people will be able to adjust their own opinion. And I do believe that's true, because there are shows where you have people on when it's not even political, when it could be talking about race, when it could be talking about constitutional amendments, when it could be talking about something going on local. Should we get rid of one-way streets? Now, somebody might call in and have the facts wrong. Now, if you know it at that time, you press back and you say, well, I don't know that that's exactly right, and you have that conversation. But I do think the listeners are smart enough to know that that's not exactly true. There's not a whole lot of opinion changing going on.
I think that it's important to share both sides of an issue and let people decide. You know, if it stays one-sided constantly, if every time somebody tunes into something and they hear the same thing over and over again, they don't get that other side. But you know, it's interesting with all the rhetoric that goes on, all the opinion shows, everything that goes on, most people are going to, if there's an act that needs to take place, a vote, whatever, they're going to do it based on the last thing they heard. Now, isn't that bizarre? Because, I mean, their opinion may be swayed through other things, but you can literally sway someone's opinion at the last minute based on what's being said. I know this is a pastor because I'll tell you, if I asked the majority of our congregation what my message was about 3 weeks ago, even though they were listening and pay attention, maybe even taking notes, maybe applying it to their lives, whatever, if I asked them today what was my message about 3 weeks ago, 90% of them could not tell me what it was. And if I was in that congregation listening to a pastor, I'd be one of those 90%. But most of them can tell you what the message was like at the end of the message.
Well, it's funny because politics has become the new Hollywood, and all media
outlets, crazy.
I know it's strange. Who knows what movie's playing this weekend? But we certainly know what's going on in the news. And it's. I was talking to somebody in the media who is not involved with this station, and we had a private conversation. And the gist of the conversation is, and I've felt this way too, that it's not so much that you're not trying to give the other opinion. A lot of times it comes down to accessibility. What goes on behind the scenes? The worst part, I think, of anybody who does a talk show, anybody who's trying to get a newspaper article, is the booking. They've got to agree to come on for them to say what they want to say.
Right.
And whether it's timing or whether it's they just don't want to do it, you can't force them. But in that, do you deny the other side to come on when they're willing to?
Yeah, it's interesting, Scott. And I know you've run into this problem as scheduling people to come in. I'm sure you have. People that you've invited to give their opinion, no, I don't want to come on. I don't understand that. Because I have a lot of opinions. And as a pastor, I have, when I was called into the ministry and I accepted that calling, one thing that I told God is that if you give me a public forum, I'll never deny you and I'll always speak the truth about you. And what I don't understand is if these people are convicted in what they believe and what they say, why would they not take every opportunity to do it? I mean, if you're telling the truth and you've got nothing to hide, who cares if someone comes on with you that's going to point by point challenge everything you say? You better have an answer anyway, or you don't need to be in that position. If you don't have the answer, so why would you not come on? I don't understand people that say, no, I'm not going on that show. And we see it all the time. We see it with... We see it with on both sides of the aisle. There's people that will not go on CNN, and there's people that refuse to go on Fox News. Just won't do it. And why is that? It's because they're, I think, honestly, one, they may not like the network because they have opinions about them, but I think the main reason is they don't want to be challenged, and they're not sure what's going to come up.
You know, it's interesting. I was in television for a little while after I had my first radio job. And I went and I had the conversation with the station manager, and we decided how the show was going to be taped and so on and so forth. And I said, this is going to be an issue-oriented talk show, and we are going to have guests on. And he said, the only person you can't have on is the mayor. And I said, the mayor? I've had the mayor on hundreds of times on radio. And I've had him, why couldn't I have him on television? If there's an issue in the city, I want to talk to the mayor about it. Because he won't come on my show. So he can't come on yours. That goes on. I don't know if people realize that. But it a lot of times it's not just the guest. There's people who say, no, you're not going to allow that person on.
Then you are not a true journalist.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, that has always stuck with me because I'd already signed the deal with that station and I was there for a year and I could never have the, I did film an episode with the mayor just because I'm that way, but they never aired it.
You know, it's interesting. It's just like anytime you have somebody that is on the right that wants to speak at a college campus today. Oh, they're protesting. And in many cases, they're told, you know, the university will get back to them, say, you know, because of security concerns, you know, unless you have a $5 million policy or you put it apart, you know, and it cancels. Why in this country would students in a school that are supposed to be learning not want to hear the other side of what they don't agree with?
You know, I think the groups that protest are not the majority, but I think the problem is that adage that there is this idea, which, see, this comes back to, I think, what I was talking about with this station. I can never remember in the 5 years we've been around where I told somebody, you cannot say that on the air. I don't think it's ever happened. Now, if somebody accidentally says something that you can't say on the air, so says the FCC. Well, yes, I've come and I say, you can't say that word. You can't do that. But I've never said you can't have that opinion. Because I've worked for groups.
It ruined your show.
Yeah, that didn't. You know, there was a radio station one time, and I don't know if I've told this story on this show, but this was all a backdoor thing. There was a radio station, or there was a group of atheists in Mansfield that were putting up billboards. And the story was not that a group of atheists is putting up billboards, it's that the churches started to picket the billboard company in Mansfield because they knew these billboards were going up. And the billboard company, who had a signed contract with the atheist group in Mansfield, said, I'm not going to do it because the churches are all going to picket me and they're never going to buy billboards anymore. And you cannot put these up, even though they paid for them and the contract was signed. So the atheist group sued the billboard company for breach of contract. Okay, that's the story. Now, I had the public relations director of the atheist group on, why are you suing the billboard company? What do you think will come of this? And that was the show. And that was a very big issue at that time. The show was over. The people who ran the radio station came, oh, that's a great show, got great numbers, everything was good, fine. Went home, didn't think twice about it. The next day, I came in, you have bombarded. To apologize on the air.
Yeah.
You have to, and I said, apologize for what? It wasn't my opinion. It was his opinion. One of our sponsors came in and said, I don't support stations that have atheists on.
Okay.
There you go.
See, that's the thing. You never learn anything if there isn't diversity of opinion and diversity of thought. There's a counter to everything. The counter to good is evil. The counter to God is Satan. The counter to, you see where I'm going with this? So there has to be, okay, why is this evil? Why is this good? Why do they have this side? Why do they have the right? You have to discuss these things. If not, you become nothing but a dictatorship. And we can't have, we're not a dictatorship.
Well, the postscript to that story is, I refuse to apologize because I thought it was a fair story. But I did have to promise that I would not have an atheist on the air again overtly. Now, if somebody came on and it was a celebrity and they just happened to admit they were an atheist, I had no control over that. But I could not do a story where atheism was mentioned in any way. But I didn't apologize, and because I didn't apologize, I know that guy pulled his sponsorship from that station.
Okay, so here's my question. Why didn't the station manager come in, and why didn't he talk to the person that was pulling their sponsorship and say, look, we allow diversity of opinion here. Why don't we schedule for you or some representative on your side to come in the following day or whenever and tell your side of the story, and you can say whatever you see. That's what should have been done, because for you to apologize for allowing someone to give an opinion, if I don't know where people are coming from, I can't reach them as a pastor. If someone comes in and sits down for me and says, Pastor, I really got a problem, I need to talk to you. And I say, what is it? And they say, I can't tell you. How do I help them? How do I change any opinion without knowing what it is?
You know what the thing about that most confused me was, he didn't come on to promote atheism. He wasn't coming on to say, join my group. He was coming on to tell us why they were suing the billboard company and what he thought the outcome would be. And the thing about this that was most fascinating, the guy, the public relations man for the atheist group, was a 27-year-old Iraqi veteran. And that still didn't mean anything. He was a 27-year-old, honorably discharged Iraqi veteran, wounded in service. And he didn't say, join my club. It's not like we gave phone numbers. Do you want to join the atheist group? Call this number. Even that was too much for this sponsor.
I don't think that sponsor realized. We run into atheists every day.
Well, yeah, I that's what I couldn't figure out. I thought, well, do you ask everybody?
Hey, Scott, we're about to wrap up here, and I'd like to invite everyone to church this weekend. As you know, I am the pastor of Community Christian Fellowship. We're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our Sunday morning service begins at 10:30. We do have a 9:30 service, unless we get bombarded with snow. But if not, you know, try to make it the next week. We're going to keep everything cleaned out at the church and try to keep it well. But I'm not going to ask anyone to go out on the roads if they're really bad. Let's just see what happens. But hey, if any of you ever want to talk to me, my number at the church is 740-494-2222. Drop me a call. Give me a line. You know, even if you'd like to just leave a message of what you think of this show or the other show, The Pastor's Spot, which is on Tuesdays at 6:15 and Wednesdays at 3:15. So, I enjoy being here, Scott. It's a good show.
It's always good to talk with you, Pastor. Stay tuned for more programming coming up on WWGH.
Especially as a detective, if I went into a room where there's more one people around, I did a quick look over of all of them, up and down. So I saw Ruby. He was standing there, and he was holding that pistol in his left hand, pressed against his leg, down just above his knee. Well, he was surrounded by police officers and reporters, but none of them was looking down. They were all looking up head high.